Good morning, happy Sunday, and welcome to this episode of On the Weekend Edition. I am your host, Brian Pettaway, and I am so thankful that you are here this morning. Going to have a great lineup today. I'm excited, very excited. I've got someone here today that's going to talk about teen addiction. Now listen, we all think we know our kids. We hope that we know our kids. We hope that our influence in the home extends far beyond the front door. But to be very honest, I think we all know that it doesn't always work out that way. Now, there are literally people who earn their living on social media with the title of influencer, and they spend all of their time trying to get you to do what they want you to do. Now, that is a scary proposition for me because I have a teenager, and as most teenagers these days, they spend a lot of time on social media. Now, it's one thing to be able to police social media for your child while they're in the home, but once they leave that front door and they get around kids whose parents are not as diligent as you are about what their kids watch, and these kids show your child what they're able to see, there's a whole new kind of influence that your kids are exposed to that we simply were not as young people. Now, this really scares me because I have no idea, like most of us do, what exactly goes on in her world when she's away from mine. So we have to be very, very careful about how we create a safe space for our kids that they can talk to us or feel like they can about virtually anything without shaming or blaming or labeling fault, which is typically what we do. We as parents don't have the same kind of time that our parents had with us. We have to be solution-based and problem fixers instantly. We have to be the instant gratification that these kids are looking for, that they will find out on the street or in social media or from their friends if we don't give it to them. That is what we are competing against, and we have to be better as parents and people who love them than our competition, because if we don't, we're going to lose out. We can no longer afford to be lazy in our parenting. We are wise enough, we have lived long enough to come up with solutions that hopefully teach our kids life lessons while we're also taking care of their problems. The amount of things that kids are exposed to today that we never were as kids are forcing us to change the way that we parent. We have to become more innovative in the way that we create safe spaces for our kids while at the same time maintaining a healthy parent-child relationship where the authority is still there, but we just have to do it in a way that is different than the way our parents did with us. Now, we are wise enough and creative enough to do this. We just have to keep in mind that we have the upper hand. We have been doing this life-living thing much longer than our children have, so we always know what's around the corner when they do not. So as parents, let's not be lazy. And the other thing, be as nosy as you possibly can in all of your children's activities. I mean, it's just simply too dangerous not to be. So yeah, I'm very excited and I can't wait to talk to Lori Mitchell today. She's going to give us some great tips on how to deal with teen addiction. And also, we're going to talk to the Petty today. We're going to get some NFL picks. We're going to talk about how he did last week and what he predicts for this upcoming week of NFL football. And I cannot wait to give him the blues about my Ravens. You know, he picked them last week to lose. They did not. Of course, they won. And I'm going to give him the blues about that one. But first, of course, we're going to get into what I love to do best, and that is give the news. And I hope that you're feeling great because I am feeling great and I do have lots of news. So let's get right to it. Now, ABC News is reporting this week that the 4-year-old death of little Orion Thomas has been ruled a homicide. He was found actually in March in the 3900 block of Garrison Boulevard, but his autopsy was done just this past week, and it was ruled a homicide by the BPD due to, get this, drug intoxication. He's 4 years old, and he died of a drug overdose. Now, no arrests have been made so far, but when they found him in March, he was unresponsive. It took him to the hospital, obviously, where he never regained consciousness. He never had a chance. He was 4 years old. Now, what are we doing? Little Orion Thomas didn't walk down to the corner and purchase an 8-ball. We know that didn't happen. So what are we doing as a village, right? Who's responsible for this? We all are. We had a 9-year-old just this summer who didn't manufacture a gun or purchase a gun, but he found his aunt's gun unsecured. And listen, his aunt's struggling just like everybody else trying to make it as a security guard, but she left her gun unsecured. He found it and he did what he sees other people in his world do who are angry with the person that they're angry with. He went, rang a doorbell, and shot this little 15-year-old in the head and killed her. Now, according to the state of Maryland, the family of the 15-year-old can't press charges against the 9-year-old. Can't happen. So that 15-year-old's family gets no closure in this. They get no justice. Who's responsible? We are. All of us who are walking around with Black Lives Matter on our t-shirts, selling the premise that Black Lives Matter. And they do. They do matter. It's an easy premise to sell because it's true. Our whole existence in this country as Black people have been based on trauma and tragedy. But what are we doing to each other to qualify that t-shirt? Nothing. No, seriously, nothing. When you have a 4-year-old that dies of a drug overdose, and you have a 9-year-old that shoots and kills a 15-year-old in the head, all Black, who's responsible for that? It ain't white folks. It's us. At some point, we got to look at us. I used to hear when I was a kid, older people say, those old people are now my age. I'm old now, right? But I used to hear old people say, or what I thought was old, the world's coming to an end. It's the end of days. And I'd be like, yeah, whatever, blah, 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 blah. But I got to tell you, I'm worried. I mean, just last week, our president said, we are closer to nuclear Armageddon than any time since 1962. And experts largely agree that the US and Russia have not been this close to nuclear warfare since the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis. But here's the difference. In 1962, Khrushchev, who was the leader of Russia at the time, did not have a death wish. He did not want to die. He had no reason to die. However, we are dealing now with Vladimir Putin, who is an egomaniac and would not be able to sustain the blow to his ego or what he believes his legacy should be if Ukraine wins this war. And just last week, Ukrainian troops in the city of Kyiv were pushing forward in the country's east and south, threatening a major new breakthrough that no one saw coming, forcing Putin's soldiers to retreat from territory that Putin had claimed to have annexed in a grand ceremony just last week. Now, with pressure growing over those defeats and the chaotic mobilization at home because residents of Russia are leaving and Putin's popularity in Russia, which he reveled in, is all but in the toilet. So now fears have intensified, feeling backed in a corner, Putin will be willing to escalate further this war rather than accept defeat. And yes, if you know your history, you might be saying, Brian, Putin has threatened this before. And you're right. In 2007, he aimed or threatened to aim his nuclear warheads at European targets. But Ukraine is completely different for Putin. This is far more personal for him. And I'm going to tell you why. When Vladimir Putin was a child, growing up in Russia, in the Soviet Union, Ukraine was owned by the Soviet Union, governed and supported by the Soviet Union. When the Soviet Union dissolved in 1991, Ukraine became an independent country. And Putin has said that he has always believed that the Soviet Union and Ukraine were one, that the Ukrainian people were Russian people and vice versa. And many experts believe and fear that he thinks his legacy is tied into having Ukraine under Russian rule. I mean, obviously there is a dollar sign attached to the success of having Ukraine under Russian government, under Russian rule, as millions of Ukrainians work in Russia. And according to the EU-funded Migration Policy Center, the Russia-Ukrainian border is the second largest migration corridor in the world, the US-Mexican border being the largest. And Russian companies are one of the largest investors in Ukraine, accounting for 7% of total foreign investment. So yeah, there's a dollar sign attached, but most experts are afraid of what Putin believes his legacy is. You can't attach a dollar sign to that. And emotional war and emotional battles are not attached to reason and rationale. And that is a huge fear fact when attached to Putin's ego. All right, enough about Putin. I don't even know how I segued into that, but it was all news last week, and Biden did talk about Armageddon, so I guess I know how I got there. But anyway, listen, in this country, ABC News is also reporting that 5 people were killed on Thursday, ages 16 to 52. They were shot and killed in a mass shooting along a nature trail in Raleigh, North Carolina. Now, the suspected shooter is a 15-year-old boy who was injured and is hospitalized, and according to a law enforcement official briefed on the investigation, the shooter is a relative to one of the victims that he killed. The shooting remains under investigation and a motive is still unknown, and police have not yet released what type of weapon was used in the shooting. Officers are still searching the suspect's home. Detectives so far have not found any social media footprint for the suspect, which is unusual. Usually people that commit these mass shootings have some type of declaration on social media of some type as to why or when they're going to do it, but none so far has been found in this case. And this story right here, I mean, listen, I don't even know what to say about this one. A fifth grade teacher was arrested for telling one of her students that she had made a kill list with students that she had taught and her colleagues. At approximately 5 p.m. on Wednesday, officers from the East Chicago Police Department were dispatched to speak with the principal and assistant principal of St. Stanislaus School, located about 20 miles south of downtown Chicago. They were called in reference to a threatening report the school officials had learned about earlier in the day regarding fifth grade teacher Angelica Carrasillo Torres, a 25-year-old educator from Griffith, Indiana. According to a statement released on social media by the East Chicago Police Department, at approximately 12:45, a fifth grade student told his or her counselor that their fifth grade teacher made comments to him or her about killing herself, students, and staff at their school. Teacher further told the student that she has a list of students to kill and that he or she was on the bottom of that list. Officials said the teacher was immediately escorted to the principal's office to discuss the disturbing incident and subsequently admitted to them that she did make those comments to the student and also confirmed that she in fact had a kill list. Now, authorities confirmed that during the conversation, the teacher did name a specific student on the list, but did not provide the list itself. The principal then advised the teacher to leave and to never return to the school pending an investigation. Now, here's where I have the problem. The East Chicago Police Department said it was not notified by the school until 4 hours after the incident, and the teacher was freely allowed to leave the premises. I mean, what? A teacher walks into a principal's office and says, yes, I have a kill list of students and staff to kill. And the principal says, okay, well, leave. Don't come back. And doesn't call authorities for 4 hours while this crazy person is out here walking around, having already told you that she has a list of people that she wants to kill. What? Have we learned nothing in these mass shootings? And all of these school shootings, have we learned? We've learned absolutely nothing. There is always something stupid that adults do, not children, that precipitate these mass shooting tragedies. And I believe that letting a teacher who has told you that she wants to kill people, kill students and staff in your school, to walk freely out of your office without having called the authorities for 4 hours is a very stupid and irresponsible thing to do. I'm sorry. The East Chicago Police Department is saying that when they got the call, they immediately, arrested Caracillo Torres, and she was taken into custody without incident. Now, it is unclear whether she has received or obtained legal representation. The investigation is still going on, and there's no other information at this time. See, if I'm a parent at a child at this school, and I read this information, I gotta see that principal. I have to see this principal. We just got to do better. We have to do better. Now, before I get into my conversation with our special guest today, which I can't wait to do, actually, I'm going to leave you with some good news. The White House is touting drug savings for seniors as Medicare open enrollment begins. They are saying that for the first time ever, the Inflation Reduction Act protects Medicare beneficiaries from catastrophic drug costs by phasing in a cap for out-of-pocket costs at the pharmacy. And what that does is it establishes a $35 monthly cap per prescription for insulin, requiring companies who raise prices faster than inflation to pay Medicare a rebate. And that allows Medicare to negotiate prices for high-cost prescription drugs. That has never happened before. And that is a big thing, and Joe Biden is going to be on the road talking about it, as he should. It's a huge win. I mean, we literally have seniors out here every winter choosing between heat, food, and their medication. It is a real thing. So when we have something like this happens, it is something that should be celebrated. It should be something that's touted by whomever got it done, and it should be talked about. And more than that, it should be enforced. There should be enforcement measures behind it, and I hope that there are. Because seniors die every year because they cannot afford either their food, their heat, or their medication. So I'm very, very happy about this news. So right now I'm going to have a young lady come on as my guest, and I'm very happy she's here. And she's going to help me shift the focus from the elderly and the drug prescriptions that I just spoke about to what is a major problem in this country, which is teenagers and drug use, and the drug addiction rate and how it is growing in this country and causing major harm, death, and destruction to our young people. Now, I asked Laura to send me what her credentials were, something that I could call her, tell people what she's involved in to raise awareness. And I got to be honest, she has so many titles that I can't list them all. So I'm just going to call her two things today for the show and for the purposes of this show. One is mother, because as a mother, she battled to help her own child through drug addiction. The other title that is very relevant to this show is board member to the Alcohol and Substance Use Advisory Council. And that is very key because that allows her to give us information as to how laws and statutes are set and tell us where to go when parents need to get help. So with all of that information and without further ado, I'd like to introduce Ms. Laura Mitchell. Laura, thanks so much for joining me today on 1500 Radio. How are you?
Hi, Brian. I'm fine. How are you?
I am well. Listen, I appreciate you being here. Sounds like you're going to inform us today how parents and others can help to tell whether someone that they love has an addiction issue or substance abuse problem. And you're also willing to tell your own story, I believe, on how you dealt with it with your own child. I know you schooled me this morning, and I appreciate it, in telling me what the appropriate wording is, that we don't use the word addict anymore, that it's, what is it, substance abuse recoverer? Is that how it works?
Substance use disorder or a person in recovery, person in need of recovery. The words addict and abuse and clean and dirty and things like that, they're stigmatizing. And it can build a wall between the person who is struggling and the resources they need to find recovery.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. You likened it to saying that someone has cancer, not that they are cancer, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Right.
And that made sense to me, so I appreciate that. So listen, what signs did you see or ignore or deny that many parents do to enable their kids or to I guess, I don't want to say enable, but keep their kids in with the addiction?
Well, enable is often an appropriate word because whether it's conscious or unconscious, we do it. We don't realize what's happening, especially initially, because we weren't talking about these things. With my child, the situation started at a very young age with suicidal attempts beginning at age 7. And so this was pre-parity and equity that says insurance has to cover mental health and substance use services the same way they cover somatic health, physical health injuries. So if you break your arm, you go and get it fixed, right? They don't tell you how many visits you can have or how many times they can, you know, try to fix it. But with, you know, how many days that should take. But with substance use and mental health, they'll only authorize, you know, a few days. But even before that, you might get 10 or 20 visits a year, and that was not enough to deal with the level of care that he needed. So later he got injured as a teen and was given an opioid. And this was something we really hadn't dealt with. We had Percocet, we had codeine, but they were very mild, very low doses, and weren't handed out as easily. But with the influx of oxycodone and OxyContin and all of those really powerful opioids and the deliberate efforts by pharmaceutical companies to get more doctors to prescribe more of those meds, right, so they could make more money, we saw a lot of people really falling into that trap with those pills. You have a legitimate injury or an illness or even having a wisdom tooth pulled or any tooth pulled, they would give you a 30-day supply of an opioid.
Oh, wow.
right. And tell you to stay ahead of the pain. So those are things to watch out for, especially if you have a child that's playing sports or gets injured in some way or has to have dental work. There is no scientific proof that oxycodone or any of the opiates work any better than Tylenol and ibuprofen alternated. So 2 hours, take the ibuprofen. The next 2 hours, take the Tylenol and alternate like that, because they actually treat the problem, the swelling, the inflammation, and those things that cause the pain. Oxycodone just basically puts a veil over your brain receptors that tell you you're having pain, and they convince you that you have more pain than you do and you need more medication to deal with it, and then it becomes a spiral. Okay. And I didn't see that. We were so busy looking for how to fix the pain, and it has got worse and worse and worse, at least, you know, because we can't take a temperature, right?
Right.
For
right,
pain. Right. We don't have an instrument to tell us, so we rely on the person telling us. But when their brain is hijacked with those opioids, their perception is skewed. So
right,
their report is skewed. So the treatment is skewed. And it just continues from there. But then when the prescription drug monitoring program came in, when we started to realize that this was a problem, a really big problem that needed to be addressed, they started watching who was writing how many of those scripts. About that time, we had realized that we had an issue. My child had then turned 18, and I wasn't privy to all the medical information, but I discovered that he was being prescribed hundreds and hundreds of pills a month.
Were you seeing any signs previous to this? Like what was he going through, or what did you see? Because, you know, we don't always have the influence on our kids that we think that we do, right?
No, so, we don't.
So,
or the insight.
Well, the insight, right. So what is it that you saw in his behavior that made you think, okay, he may be in trouble?
Well, it was when I found the prescription bottle with the number of pills on it. And then I started to realize, wait a minute, that's too many. That's too much at once. And then, you know, it wasn't a very old prescription, but it was almost gone. So I knew that we had been taking too many, right, too often. And so we started to have discussions, worked out a plan with the doctor. I was seeing him withdrawing from various things and people, some change in who he was hanging out with, but that's not necessarily, that's a yellow flag,
right,
as I would call it. It's something you need to pay attention to and figure out why, you know, what's happening with this other group of friends versus this group of friends, and what activities are they undertaking? What are they doing when they're hanging out? But it's not a red flag, because people, you know, they mature different rates and they change friends.
Right.
We all do, right? Change a lot of things. But it is one of those indicators. But when they moved in and started shutting down doctors who were over-prescribing, other doctors got very nervous. We had had a plan all worked out to wean off of these pills when I realized that, you know, he was taking too many. But then they reneged on that plan and said, no, we're not going to prescribe any. So you go from somebody who's taking, I can't even tell you how many, at least 5 or 6 a day, at wow. least, wow. to they can't get any, right? You have bone cancer. You've been taking 5 pills a day. I'll give you 1. Well, of course, their brain is saying, I'm in more pain even. I need more. You start to have those withdrawal symptoms. And I think that's what I noticed the most was the withdrawal. But I was expecting it because I knew we were trying to wean off of it at that point. But we couldn't get any. So, you know, there was the neighborhood dealer with the heroin and other, you know, street opioids, because now they were all, the prescriptions were all dried up. You couldn't even buy the pills on the street.
Right.
Then it started to get mixed with other things, fentanyl and other things that are very deadly. But I remember the moment I realized that he had moved to the point of injecting. I didn't know what still, but I remember that moment like I remember 9/11. I'll never forget it. I was walking in with groceries, and he had been watching the history of the drug wars, or the war on drugs, on History Channel, and they were talking about the nodding out. And that is, you know, they're sitting there doing regular activities, and all of a sudden their head just kind of drops and they look like they're falling asleep, but it's continuous. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, first thing in the morning, they just got out of bed and they're nodding out. So things like that. Then I started to realize that I was finding pens that had been taken apart, like ink pens, and just the barrel was left. Well, that's an indicator that they could be snorting, ingesting it through their nose. So that was something that I had seen for a while and didn't. It started to click once I realized this, but I hadn't noticed or put it together before that. Couldn't keep spoons in the house. I now know they weren't being thrown away with a yogurt on the way to school, right?
Right.
They were being used as tools of the trade for injecting drugs. And Q-tips, the cotton on the end of the Q-tips. We'd find Q-tips with no cotton on the end. Bundles of foil everywhere. Could not keep tin foil in the house. And sometimes we'd find it balled up and it would be black with soot, like it had been burnt. So he was shaping pipes to smoke whatever, because it could be a range of things. It could be anything from marijuana to heroin or fentanyl that they're smoking.
Now, when you approached him, did you ever approach him about the behavior or the things that you saw? And if you did, what was his take on it? How did he respond to you?
I did. I also noticed that at that same time, the day after I saw that, actually later that night after I saw that on TV and it dawned on me, I sat him down and asked him about it. And he admitted it, that he was doing it and he couldn't stop. It was also July and he had on long sleeves. So that was another clue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they're covering up their arms or covering up their legs, or you're seeing sores that, you know, or bruising, a lot of bruising. It was always, oh, I was moving something and bruised myself, whatever. But that wasn't what was happening. So he admitted it. We talked about, you know, where to go from there, how I could help. Then we started trying to find treatment, and it was very, very hard. It still is.
Really?
Oh, yes. Finding treatment that's accessible, and by that I mean they have space for you. They have, you have insurance that will cover it fully, or at least to an affordable extent, and that you can stay for the period of time that you need to recover. We still don't have a lot of those things. We have more treatment facilities, so it's a little easier at certain times to get into a treatment center. It's actually become a very booming business, unfortunately, but they're not all the same. They're not really regulated. Even the recovery houses after you get out of treatment are not regulated. So you have to be very careful and very astute about looking at what they're doing. There's a thing called patient brokering where the treatment centers and the recovery houses will actually work together to feed each other patients. And they get in a recovery house, which is not really a recovery house. Sometimes they're providing them with drugs. They're relapsing and going back into treatment over again, because it's a constant source of business of revenue for them that way.
Right.
Now, so you really have to be careful about that. And the insurance, we fight them every day, every year in the legislature in Maryland for almost a decade now, trying to get the legislature to make the insurance cover care the way we're supposed to.
Now, if I'm a teenager, right, and I have a friend or a sibling, I don't know if he's your only child, but if I have a friend or a sibling that I feel is using or abusing a substance, who do I go to? If you know, kids are always afraid of being labeled a snitch or of losing right. that friendship. Who do I go to?
Well, that's a really good question because it's going to depend on the circumstances. I always recommend that if the child is safe or the student is youth is safe, going to their parents, they should hand that off to them.
Okay.
This is not something that the student can handle on their own, or that a teenager or preteen even can handle on their own. They're going to need adult supervision or adult assistance. If they're not safe there, they don't feel safe, sometimes the parents are also in active addiction. And that's really challenging to say, hey, I think my brother or my sister or my friend is, misusing drugs, and your parents are as well. That's a really different conversation.
Right, right, right.
So that, or a trusted adult at school or a counselor. And a trusted adult doesn't always have to be a professional. For many people, a trusted adult is building services person, or the media center specialist, the librarian, something like that. But somebody that you trust in your life, an aunt, an uncle, whatever that is, talk to them. They will help you navigate how to do that, particularly if you get to like one of the mandated reporters in the schools. They tend to know where those resources are, but not always.
You mean like a guidance counselor or someone like that you're referring
right,
to?
Right, right. Okay. And keep in mind that in Maryland, we call counselors, the people that we call counselors in our schools are more academic advisors. They're
oh my
not
gosh, everything's
licensed
changed
therapists.
So much.
They're not, they have a lot of experience, but they don't get the same training as a therapist or a social worker. Okay.
Okay.
But I think most of all, I would say 988 is the best option that people have right now. If you're having any kind of life crisis, whether it's suicidal ideation or substance use or anything like that yourself, or you need help finding help for a friend, that is a great resource. And you can call, text, or chat to 988.
Okay.
That's a really helpful resource. If it's something that's happening in school, you can call the Safe Schools hotline. That's anonymous. Sometimes you feel like you need to talk with somebody about it and figure out what you can and can't say. But the one thing I'll say is that it is better to tell someone and have your friend alive and getting help and mad at you than to lose them.
Yeah.
And that's really the alternative right now. You don't even need to have a substance use disorder to die from it.
Right.
It could be the very first thing you try the very first time.
Especially with the fentanyl.
Yeah.
So,
and it's everywhere.
So as a kid, I was always into sports, so I never really got into drinking or smoking or drugs or anything like that. But I grew up in West Baltimore, and it was, when I say it was all around me, it was all around me.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, I was almost given a certain amount of respect because I didn't engage, so people stopped even offering it to me. Today is a little bit different. And so and I know Nancy Reagan coined the phrase, just say no, way, way back in the day, which I thought was oversimplified.
Yes.
How do kids, without having the stigma of being soft, turn away from that when people around them are offering it?
Yeah, the just say no phrase never worked. I can't tell you how many pictures, either mugshots or morgue shots, that I've seen with students wearing their DARE shirts.
Right.
Our family members, have shared. I'm part of a number of support groups for parents of persons with substance use disorder. And it is excruciating. I held my breath for 15 years and I still haven't fully exhaled. But really, I think you have to deal with in the moment. And in some situations, it could actually be dangerous to just say no.
Right, exactly.
Depending on, the environment that you're, like the one that you're talking about, that was very courageous to do that. Not everybody has that foundation to do that. So some of the things that you can even role play with your child is in practice, just like you do if they were dealing with a bully or other things, you kind of do scenarios. So I know that early in recovery, one of the things phrases that my son used a lot was, no, I'm good right now, or not right now. So
okay.
You're not saying no. You're
okay.
Not saying, I don't do that stuff. And you're, implying that they are horrible people because they are or anything like that. You're just saying, not right now.
Yeah, it's smart.
And it can get you out of that
situation.
That's
very smart. Yeah, very
but
smart.
For the parents, they also need to have a plan with the students. If they're going to a party or even just to a friend's house, that they know how to get out of that situation and how to get home, how to get away from it, not just out the door, but away from it. So having those no questions asked arrangements with them to say, you can call me anytime, day or night, and I will come and get you if you don't feel safe, or you don't, you know, you had a designated driver, but they decided to drink anyway, or use something else, or they're too sleepy, you know, they're falling asleep and you're afraid to get in the car with them. Call me, I'll come pick you up.
Right.
Alternatively, you can put the car service apps on their phone, the Uber, the Lyft, with attached to a credit card, so they can just call for their own ride, right? And get home safely without having to make a big scene or make any, you know, allegations against anybody or have it out with them or any of that.
Did you go through? I know that a lot of children who deal with substance abuse, it almost destroys the fabric of the family. Did you go through any of that? Did you have any problems within your family because of it, other than just with your son?
Well, his father, who I was no longer with and hadn't been for a number of years, has a substance use disorder as well. To this day, he is still in active use, primarily alcohol, but he has ventured into other things over the years. So the gene was there. There is a physiological hereditary piece to this. There's also a huge, huge mental piece to this, mental health piece to this.
Okay.
And that is, for me, the single biggest preventative factor is making sure that your child is mentally healthy, that you're getting them help when they need it. Lots of kids have anxiety, and they can learn techniques to deal with that and to work with it so that it is lessened or even eliminated. There are a lot of different ways, exposure therapy and different things. But if you don't deal with it, if you just say, oh, they'll be fine, it's just a teenager, or it's just, you know, they'll be fine, they just need to toughen up or whatever, it doesn't get better. It
right,
just gets worse because they never learn the tools to work with it.
Right, but it's such a fine line. I have a teenager. I have a daughter who'll be 13 very soon. And I know that as a 13-year-old, I struggled in some aspects of life. As 13 is not it's a tough age. 13, 14,
it
it's a very tough age. You're learning yourself and all. And I don't want to push the panic button. You know what I mean? I don't want to be that over-concerned or overbearing father. But at the same time, like you say, like, so how do I determine what's a yellow flag, what's a red flag? You know what I mean? Because you don't want to draw so much attention to a small thing that becomes a big thing when it didn't have to be. So,
yeah.
But you don't want to ignore it either. You know what I mean? It's such a crazy fine line as a parent that you have to walk.
It is, like everything else you do as a parent, right? This is not for the faint of heart.
Right, right.
We're doing it right now. We're talking about it. So share this broadcast with her.
Okay.
Sit down with her, share, and not just one time. When you're in the car driving to or from school or to from a sport or whatever event, that's a great time. You have a captive audience and you can talk with them about what's going on with them. Who is their safe person? Are they struggling with anything? What are your strengths? So you're looking at positive parts and helping them see that, but not just saying, oh, just look at everything as roses and smile more and it'll be fine.
Right.
Because that is not necessarily true.
Right.
Right. You have to be real with them. You have to know that. And sharing your story, saying, look, when I was 13, I felt like this. I've dealt with this. I didn't know what to do with this. And I didn't know who to talk to. So I just want to make sure that, you know that you can talk to me if you're not comfortable with that. I want to know that you have at least one other adult that you feel safe talking to, and help them identify that person. Ideally more than one, but to, you know, one at school, one at home, one at camp or work or wherever else they're going. And that they have friends, that they're making healthy friends, friendship relationships, because that, you know, if you think back to Maslow's hierarchy, one of the huge things that we all need is that sense of belonging. You have to feel connected. And it's often said that connection is the opposite of addiction and the cure for it, right? Because when people start self-medicating, start using substances voluntarily, not prescribed by a doctor or anything like that, they're experimenting or they're trying this out. And then they're like, oh, that helped soothe this anxiety or this thing that I was feeling I didn't know what to do with. It quiets it down, so I don't have to deal with it. It's like, I don't have to deal with a crying baby once they fall asleep.
Right, right.
So it's sort of like that. But guess what? They're going to wake up again, and they're going to cry more until you meet their needs. So it's kind of the same thing. But that's where you run into the, oh, well, you just use some more of it, and it'll be fine. But then develop a dependency and potentially an addiction, particularly if you have the gene in your family already.
Right.
It's like a light switch. Once right. it gets turned on, it's on. It never goes back off. You will forever have a substance use disorder, even if you are not in active use. You will fight it every day the rest of your life.
Did your son, did he ever go through a period where he lied to you about it? It sounds like he just admitted
oh
it right
gosh.
Off the break. But
Yeah. When confronted face to face, yes. He admitted it. We tried to get help because it was very early in at that point, early in the post pill period of the post prescription period.
Mm-hmm.
But the lies, because their brain is hijacked and because the withdrawal is so incredibly horrible,
right,
from opioids in particular, but many other things too, methamphetamines and lots of different things. The lies, they will do anything, risk anything, sacrifice anything or anyone, including themselves, in order to not feel that withdrawal. It's not that they're trying to feel that high anymore, because that only comes the first couple of uses.
Right.
They're just trying not to be sick. They call it getting well.
Okay.
By getting their next dose, they're getting well, because it feels like the flu times 100, the worst flu times 100.
Right.
Muscle aches, shaking, cramping, vomiting, the works. And, you know, who wouldn't want that just
now? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, you didn't just wake up as a knowledgeable parent about all of this. It sounds like
no.
It was a trial and error situation of the worst kind. So when you decided that you wanted to get involved beyond just your son's recovery, what was that journey like? How did you decide, I want to do something for not just my son, but for everyone? Like, what was that all about?
Well, it really, I don't think it was a conscious choice. I'm an unwilling participant,
okay.
unwilling advocate, because I was scrambling, searching, trying to figure out how I was going to save my son's life. As I watched all of his friends die around him.
Oh, wow.
There's a picture of him with about a dozen of his friends, and there's only two of them left.
Jeez.
And that person is really struggling right now. So, yeah, it was desperation and necessity and just scrambling, trying to find this and that and getting connected. And at that time, I was serving an elected office on the Eastern Shore. And I used to joke that as an elected official, they have to give me the microphone and they can't control what I say when I get it. So we're going to talk about substance use disorder. We're going to talk about treatment, the lack thereof. We're going to talk about what we need and what we have or don't have and figure out how to fill those gaps. And that kind of launched me into this. We set up a task force and we started looking at just that, like, where are those gaps and who can help us fill them? Because we saw the impact it was having on our community in so many ways. Because every loss that you have, right, that affects your mental health and your security. So every one of these deaths of his friends and others, it impacted a bunch of people around them. It wasn't
right.
just them, and it wasn't just their family. And those get cumulative. So, I saw that. As I said, I couldn't walk his path for him, but I could make darn sure there was one, and I could make sure that he could find it. And if he could find it, then others could find it.
Correct.
So that's how I set out on that journey. Like, who can help us? And I realized that there weren't enough people that could help us to get where we needed to get. So I had to, we all had to be part of that movement. And I just joined in with the advocating at the state legislature and locally and supporting recovery groups and nonprofits that were focused on all of that. And here I am. Right. 20 years later,
right.
still doing it. I'm still working very hard at it, harder than ever. I'm a full-time volunteer, and most of what I do is around substance use prevention and mental health care and treatment for substance use and mental health.
Well, it's interesting because the area in which this station is located, a lot of the areas are low-income areas around here. And so there are a lot of liquor stores on every corner, but there aren't a lot of substance abuse recovery centers that you can find. And certainly a lot of people don't have the insurance to have those things covered. So what can you tell the parents that are listening that are in that situation about getting help? How can they get that kind of help for their kids when they don't have those kind of resources?
Well, there are requirements and there are options. I've seen, actually seen parents drop their children off of their employment-related insurance mm-hmm. in order for them to get Medicaid so that they can get into treatment. There are centers for adults all over the state. For youth, it's a very, very different story. So the first thing I would do, if I were doing this again, and I hope I never have to, I would be calling my legislator and saying, here's our issue. Here's the problem. I can't find treatment. There's no treatment for anyone under 18 in the area for either mental health or substance use disorders.
Right.
And can you help me find something? Because we have been putting bills in again and again and again. There's one under consideration right now for consumer health advocacy program that would be that one-stop shop. I could give you a number right now that you could call, and they would help you either get insurance if you didn't have it or navigate your insurance and finding a treatment provider and a facility if needed that would get you the care you needed and make sure your insurance was covering it, all the way up to and including filing a complaint with the Maryland Insurance Administration if need be, if the insurance was refusing, or taking it to court if they were refusing to cover what's mandated by federal law.
Absolutely. If you have that number, you can tell it now. I mean,
we don't have that act yet.
Oh, okay. All right.
It was in last year, and it got sent for a study. Maryland Insurance Administration is working on that right now.
Okay.
But certainly if people call their Maryland legislators right now and say, look, here's this CHAP bill, CHAP, the Consumer Health Advocacy Program, that will make sure that if I need it or my family member ever needs it of any age, mental health or substance use treatment, they can get it with one phone call to one number, not 988 that will talk right. to you and help direct you where to call next. They actually have people with lived experience that would help you connect and do warm handoffs and navigate that entire system until you were getting the treatment you needed covered so that it's accessible.
I had a guest on here a few weeks ago. I was talking about teen suicide, and mm-hmm. a mother who was also an activist now in helping with that movement. She was on talking about HIPAA and how she didn't find out that her child, who was in her freshman and sophomore year of college, had an issue with depression because of HIPAA, and wasn't giving any information on the medication that her child was being. Have been prescribed or anything. Are there any laws on the books in reference to that? Because I just don't think it's a very healthy law at all.
Well, there's a reason that it exists, and it's because the people's health conditions were being used against them for getting insurance, getting housing, getting employment. There are some downsides to it, in that you just described one of them. If you see that in your child or in your loved one, there are steps that you can take. You can go to court and have them deemed, it's a little more difficult in Maryland than in some states, have them determined to be not able to take care of themselves and make decisions for themselves. So basically incompetent to make decisions for themselves and be appointed for their care. Another option, if your child, for instance, is about to turn 18 and you know that they have struggled with issues in the past, or that you see something going on that may want to to do that, make sure that they have a medical directive. You can ask them, work with them if they want to give you medical power of attorney, so that if you see them in a desperate situation that they may not recognize themselves, because of course they're in the throes of whatever is happening, that you can make that determination for them. You have the legal right to make that determination for them and to get your medical record, their medical records. You can also just have them, there's a form you fill out every time you go to a new doctor, or you can ask for it if you're going to the same doctor, that you could designate who they could share information with. So talk with your child about putting you on those forms so that you can get that information and be able to help them if needed. Okay. And that is largely dependent on your relationship with your child, right? But that goes all the way back to the beginning of our conversation where I said, talking with them and building that relationship, making sure they feel safe and comfortable talking with you about whatever it is they're struggling with, because we all struggle with something at some point.
Right.
They assume that we know nothing, and we assume that they know nothing.
And we're both wrong.
We're both very, very wrong.
Well, listen, before I let you go, because we, you know, run out of time, but I wanted to ask you, how is your son doing? Like, how did that end?
He's doing very, very well. He's 7.5 years, I'm sorry, 6.5 years, almost 7 years. Next month will be 7 years in recovery.
Awesome.
I've got married, bought a house.
Oh, wow.
And,
great.
Yeah, he's doing really, really well. You know, his description of using was taking that pill made him feel like normal looked.
Right.
He thought everybody else was normal and he was the oddball, and it made him feel more like they appeared to be to him. But guess what? There's no normal. We're all abnormal. If you
all
want to
of
say,
us are.
You know, this is, none of us are the same and none of us have it all figured out.
And
if
you
we
say
did, we'd be really rich.
And you say you have not yet exhaled, actually, even though he's doing well.
Not completely, because as I said, this is an all day, every day. Recovery is all day, every day, not just like addiction. It doesn't go away. I've seen people that had 20 years of recovery have a relationship go bad or lose a job or something, and they go out and they dabble, they use, and they, you know, 20 years ago, we didn't have fentanyl.
Right. Right.
Or they'll use the same amount that they used to use, and their tolerance is not there. That's why coming out of incarceration, coming out of treatment, coming out of the hospital is such a dangerous time, because your tolerance has dropped, but you still tend to use the same amount.
Right.
So, you know, and that fentanyl there, you can get strips to test it. It'll tell you if there's fentanyl present, but it won't tell you how much.
Correct.
So it's just a really deadly time to try to use anything or experiment. It's not the same as, you know, us taking sips out of the liquor bottles in the cabinet. It's just not the same.
Well, listen, I appreciate you coming on today with me. And the knowledge that you've dropped today, I'm sure will be used by many of us, including myself with my daughter. And I'm definitely going to have the talks with her. And what you said about role playing, great idea. I'm certainly going to do that. And try to create a safe space for her to talk to me. I thought I already had, but she could never be too safe. You know what I mean? So I appreciate you, Laura. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you are now an official member of 1500 Radio, and hopefully we can talk to you again.
Absolutely. Anytime.
All right, Laura. Thank you very much. Well, there you have it. There's Laura Mitchell. I am so thankful that she came on today. But it is now time for the petty. I know you hear the music, so that means the man is about to jump on the line here. Let me give him a call and see what he's got to say this week, because I am more than excited about giving him a hard time about my Ravens. I'm going to blast him. I know he's going to duck and going to dodge. He might even backstep a little bit, but I'm going to give him the blues. So let's see what he's got to say.
Brother B, Brother B.
The petty. How you doing this week, man?
I'm doing pretty good. And let me congratulate you and the city of Baltimore on that fantastic win last week.
Man. You took my thunder, man. I've been telling my fans I was going to blast you. You just went ahead and threw water on the fire, homie.
I got to give props when props are due. That was a wonderful win, a good comeback for them. I'm happy for all the fans there. Hopefully they've exercised those demons away from M&T Bank Stadium.
No demons, man. You just jinx them. That's all.
Well, maybe not. So, look, let's get into the slate of what's going on this week.
Okay.
Telling you, there's some divisional games that's going on. This week, there's some big games going on. And we're going to start with the 1 o'clock slate. And we're going to start with the team that I know you have no love for, but you know I love them. I'm talking about the boys from the Golden Gate City.
No.
We'll be traveling to the ATL to meet those Dirty Birds. Yes, the Falcons.
All right.
just an easy one for me. It should be an easy one for anyone. Just take the Niners. I know you say I take them every week, but this is one of those weeks. Yeah, you take them because of that defense.
Okay. What week have you not taken them since? What week?
Well, it's only been 6 weeks, so this is the sixth week. So I'm going to take them for right now. But that will be subject to change. Let's move right along, and we're going to talk about this one right here, man. I'm telling you, man, I tell your fans every week, if I take the Browns, take the other team. If I take the other team, take the Browns. Well, this week, you got those Patriots going to Cleveland, and I like the Patriots better than I like the Browns. So I'm taking the Patriots. I'm not saying everybody else should take the Browns. Take the Patriots because I think they're a better team.
Okay.
And now we have those J-E-T-S, Jets going to Lambeau to meet the Cheeseheads. And I'm telling you right now, I think the Jets will be grounded because Aaron Rodgers did not like what happened across the pond last week. So I'm looking for the Packers to bounce back pretty big over the Jets.
All right.
Here's a nice divisional matchup. You got the Jacksonville Jaguars going into Indianapolis to meet that team called the Colts. And they played early this year. Jacksonville did what they did, like they usually do. They beat the Colts in Jacksonville. But this time they're going to Indy, and I got the Colts getting their revenge and beating the Jaguars.
All right.
After that, we have those Norsemen going down the South Beach to meet the Dolphins. And the Vikings are a better team. The Dolphins, they're fire, but there's no Tua. Their quarterback situation is a big question mark. I like the Vikings over the Dolphins.
Captain Kirk, you're becoming a believer. Go ahead.
Nah, not really. And then we have those Bengal Tigers going, marching into New Orleans to meet the Saints. I don't know what's going on down there. I know that dome place is rocking all the time. It gives teams a hard time. I like Cincinnati better than I like the Saints. And I would like to take the Saints. I just like Cincinnati a little better. So I'm going to take the Bengals over that one.
Okay. All right.
Hopefully this guy has his head problems and his personal problems in check. I'm talking about Tom Brady and Tampa Bay going into Steel City to meet the Steelers. The Steelers now have found their quarterback finally, but I think this is the wrong week for him to show out. I like the Buccaneers over the Steelers.
I got you on that.
There are only three teams playing at 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. And we got the Panthers going into LA to meet the Rams. The Rams need this win. They really need this win. So I'm going to take the Rams this afternoon over the Panthers. And next up, we have a couple of birds playing. I'm talking about those red birds from Arizona. The Cardinals going to see Seattle, see those sea chicken Seahawks.
Okay.
I like Seattle at home, but there's something about the Cardinals maybe needing this win to keep Seattle at bay. So I'm going to take the Cardinals over the Seahawks.
Mm.
And now at 4 o'clock, this is the one everyone will probably be watching at 4 o'clock. We're talking about those Buffalo Hot Wild Wing Bills going to see the Kansas City Chiefs. This is a revenge match of that great game last year in the playoffs.
Right.
And I'm telling you, man, Buffalo has this game. It's been circled on their calendar as soon as the schedule came out. They want their revenge. They want it bad. And there will be no Tyreek Hill in KC. Take away Travis Kelce, and you can beat the Chiefs. And I think Buffalo's the team that can do it. So I'm taking Buffalo over the Chiefs.
As much as I hate the Bills, man, I agree with you 100%. I will put my money on the Bills in this game.
And tonight on the big stage, you got them boys going into Philadelphia to see those Pigeons. No, I don't have a list. I call Philly Philadelphia. I live in the area. I know what I'm talking about. They will see those Eagles, those undefeated Eagles. And will the Eagles remain undefeated?
They will.
And beat them boys? Well, you know what, Brother B? I agree with you.
All right.
Philly is hot right now. The city is hot. The Phillies are doing well. The Flyers opened up well. And they're just waiting on the Sixers to show themselves. So I'm telling you right now, take the Eagles over them boys.
I got you.
And finally on Monday night, this is a no-brainer. Russell Wilson just does not look the same since he's been playing for the Broncos. And they're going out to L.A. to meet the Chargers. I take the Chargers. This is another divisional game. It's a big one. But I like Chargers better than I like the Broncos.
The Chargers don't excite me, man. Chargers. I keep telling you they do not excite me. There's nothing
they
about the Chargers
ugly.
That excite me.
They win very ugly. It is very boring games with them, but they are winning. And finally, hopefully I can get back on track because my Thursday night record has taken a big dent.
Huge
so
beat.
This Thursday is taking a big dent. in. So Thursday night, you got the Saints going to the desert to meet those Redbirds. And I like the Cardinals at home because they need a home victory. It's been a while since the fans of Arizona have had something to cheer about. And finally, on Thursday night, the Cardinals will beat the Saints. There you have it, Brother B.
All right, listen, I got a question for you. What do you think about Fields, man? Is he a good quarterback on a bad team, or is he just a bad quarterback?
Justin Fields is a very good, talented quarterback. The system is not designed for his talents. And that's the problem with a lot of teams this year, is that they're not designing their systems to match the talents of their quarterbacks. And I think once Chicago gets a good offensive coordinator or coach that's intelligent enough to say that, hey, these are his talents, we need to exploit them so that we can be a better team, Chicago will be a better team.
Well, listen, you're more than welcome to come back over here to the Ravens. You know, you had dual citizenship. It has expired, but we will be more than willing to help give you a new passport. Come on back over to the Ravens.
Well, let me say a little something, Brother B, about that. As to quote someone that's someone affiliated with the Ravens or the Raven name, nevermore. That's all I got for you, Brother B.
You're wrong for that. All right, man. You take care of yourself, brother.
Love you, brother.
Love you, too.
Take care.
Peace. Well, there you have it. You heard it straight from the Petty's mouth. I am so, so happy about the Ravens winning and me giving him the opportunity to apologize, backslide, whatever you want to call it. But just giving him the blues is a fun thing because sibling rivalry is a real thing. So I enjoy it very, very much. But again, I enjoy him coming on every week, being willing to take the ribbing that I give him from time to time. You know what I'm saying? It's fun. But listen, I also appreciate all the tips he gives because he has put a little bit of money in my pocket. Also, I'd like to thank Laura Mitchell for coming on today. She was a wealth of information telling us what to look for, how to deal with it once we find it, and then where to go to help get help for it. And last but not least, of course, I want to thank you for again joining me this weekend. I'm always appreciative that you're here and you're giving me an hour of your Sunday, of your rest and relaxation, or in between your church time, whichever it is. And remember, I always love the comments and the feedbacks. Please get at me on IG, at On with Brian Pettaway. I read every single one, and I will respond to yours one way or another, and perhaps I'll even read it on the show. So yes, I really appreciate the comments and the feedbacks. No matter what it is, positive or negative, they always help me grow. But now I have to go, and before I go, remember what I always say and what was always told to me as a kid, and that is, the best thing about doing nothing is you can quit whenever you want. So after hopefully your rest and relaxation today, you get up tomorrow and you conquer the world, because I can promise you, that's what your boy is going to try to do. Go Ravens, and people, enjoy the rest of what's left of your Sunday. I am out of here. Peace.